Kia ora tātou. Welcome into another episode of Playmakers, where every episode we will catch up with a personality of our rugby game, whether it be past, future or present. And this week we are very lucky to be joined by one of the best finishers in the game, former All Black Rico Gear. Riggs, kia ora my Māori. How's it going, bruh?
Kia ora. Yeah, no good, thank you, bro. Not too bad. Always good to see you, of course.
Mate, you're looking slick, my mate. You just come back from the barber. He's looking very tan, very trimmed.
Well, I had a bit of a clean-up, you know, sort of, you know, it's all about appearance and, you know, especially for you, you know, we don't get to catch up that often, so here we are.
Now, bro, I mean, a lot of people might or might not know, you grew up in Gisborne, and for you, bro, what was it like growing up in an area such as X? I know it was a very sporting area, but what was it like for you growing up in Gizzy?
Yeah, had a beautiful upbringing. You know, grandparents who spent a lot of time on the, you know, on the farm, you know, docking and being around shearing and all that sort of stuff on holidays. You know, obviously the East Coast, we're sort of obviously close to the beach, so did a lot of, I was actually a competitive swimmer, bro, growing up.
Ooh.
And I even jumped into surf lifesaving, but when I realised you had to wear those budgie smugglers, I quickly pulled out of there. So I didn't last too long, you know, in the surf life-saving scene. But again, you know, we're sort of brought up playing rugby and rugby league on a Sunday. So, yeah, so quite a lot of sports, which, you know, really grateful to have done.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know you as a junior were very, very good at rugby league. I mean, what was it that brought you to rugby?
Yeah, so obviously Tūranga Tāne, so Gisborne Boys High. And at the time when I was at school, you know, coming through as a junior, Gisborne Boys High were extremely strong in their rugby union. You know, I think they were world champions. They'd won the top four. They'd won the Condor Sevens. So I got to, I guess, be inspired by a very talented group of, you know, rugby men. And then, obviously, having a really good program, First 15, you know, as you know. So I just basically ended up going down that path and just stayed with rugby. So that's kind of how it all unfolded.
One thing Gisborne didn't do that year was beat Tote College, but that's for another kōrero. But I, like you said, going to Gisborne Boys High and having some supreme athletes go through that whole program along with yourself. When you first got there, who was the sort of guys that you looked up to in that First 15?
Yeah, gee, there were a lot of good footballers. I think one particular year they had six boys that made New Zealand secondary schools, you know, which is a phenomenal amount of players. You had guys like, there was Jimmy Noble and Dan Godbold. And Mutu Ngarimu was another one who does a bit of coaching at Hawke's Bay now. Mark Jefferson, who was a cricketer. So just a lot of really talented sports athletes. And I think around that time it was actually quite difficult, you know, being from a regional town, for those sorts of boys to I guess, move on to, you know, first division sides. It was a bit more challenging back then.
Yeah, the thing is, though, you sort of forget, for such a small place, and a lot of times now we see a lot of players from such as Gizzy Boys going to other schools now, going to the so-called bigger schools and getting on TV and what have you. But I think back in those days, when you were able to stay in your own area, every sort of first 15, like Napier Boys, you go away to Napier Boys, I mean, Tote College, those sort of schools, and do those traditionals. Or something unique about those times, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, I guess that it was very tribal, and to a certain extent it still is. But again, you know, you spend, you know, whatever it is, 5-6 years, you know, representing that club, I guess you'd call it. And, you know, that's what the exciting part is. And, you know, we all played rugby when we were younger because you played with your mates. So, you know, you do that at school, and I think that's what makes it really, really special. And it's pretty hard to, you know, as you know, we sort of, as we get older, we remember those times extremely well, and they're probably some of our favourite pastimes, you know, in rugby.
Yeah, and I want to take it on, because you're only a young man when you made this team, and Amasio Valance was, I think he was still at Sacred Heart at the time, was the Comm Games, was it 98? Kuala Lumpur. And I know Marcio's story is like they trained against the boys and he carved up and ended up making a team for you. How did you actually make that squad?
That's a really good question, bro, because I was playing for Poverty Bay at the National Sevens at the time. And then I think Titch might have picked I'm pretty sure it was a 40-man training squad. So I went along to the training camp. And out of 40 competitors there, you know, the first thing, of course, you know, what we did back then was we do the bloody beep test.
The beep test.
And, you know, being a little bit naive, I sort of rocked up and I came dead last in the peak test. So I thought to myself, I'm never going to make that side. But luckily for me, it just didn't come down to the testing. I was able to sort of play my way into the squad eventually. But I guess that's how it started, bro. Just going along to the national, you know, the national sevens where all the unions were involved. Which I guess, you know, sort of missed that a little bit, you know, seeing that, you know, the smaller unions taking on the bigger sides.
Titch always loved picking a bolter, and you're definitely one of them along with Amacio in that team. But what was it like? We talk about, well, I mean, it's hard for people to sort of understand how hard Titch's trainings are. And as a young man, I mean, I know how tough it was for me, but how did you find that those first couple of camps, and especially being at Comm Games where it was massive?
Yeah, no, it was a real shock. You know, you had to, I think pretty quickly you realised the, you know, what it was going to take purely from a fitness point of view. And, you know, like all good Māori boys, we rely on our talent, you know, most of all. And fitness and all that sort of stuff wasn't necessarily the front of the mind. But you quickly had to sort of adapt to that. And, you know, with guys like, you know, Eric Rush and Dallas Seymour that were in the squad at the time. I think they were the older guys at the time. And, man, they were the fittest dudes. But, you know, and again, that was sort of inspirational. And I think, you know, when you're around that sort of thing, you know, it rubs off on you. So you just have got to make a decision and make a choice. And, yeah, sort of had to come up to speed pretty quickly. Or you weren't going to make the side.
So a young kid from Gizzy playing for Poverty Bay at the Nationals goes in, gets picked for a Commonwealth Games, gets picked with, like you say, Eric Rush, All Black, Dallas Seymour, All Black, Jonah, All Black, Christian Cullen, All Black, Bruce Rahana, Roger Randall. I mean, and then there's you and Mudgy. How was that like, not only being part of that team, but going as a New Zealand squad, you know, a whole New Zealand team, New Zealand to a Commonwealth Games in Kuala Lumpur?
Yeah, man, I was just happy I got to play next to Jonah. That's hard. All I was worried about. I'm not worried about, but excited about. You know, just training, you know, next to the big fella, and you know, because that was '98, so you know, a couple of years after that '95 World Cup, where he became a superstar.
Oh, yeah.
And then in the Comm Games Village, man, you know, people would stop him wherever he went, which was pretty special. But yeah, being a couple of the younger guys. It was quite a tough build up to the games, and you know I think we had a squad of might have been 16 or 17 guys, and you know guys that are your best mates, you know, were missing out on the team.
Yeah.
You didn't know if you were going to make it, especially I think, you know, us being younger guys, we thought, oh, you know, we don't really have the experience, so we might miss out. So you play a lot of mind games with yourself, but you know, Titch called us into the headmaster's office and had the conversation and. Geez, I've never been so nervous, but, you know, really grateful to have had that opportunity.
I can't help but laugh because one of these blokes is one of my best mates, and you guys had a camp in Singapore before they broke it down and they picked the last 12, eh? And the four that missed out, I remember everyone was kicking cans when you like you said, the team was named, and then the four blokes were there, and they sort of waved you off in their own sort of way, but I think it was in a funny way, and the boys sort of enjoyed it, but... That's sort of one thing, I suppose, did you take out of the sevens, that everyone, regardless of if they made the team or not, they always had the team's best wishes and in mind, you know? So it was always that family feel?
Yeah, I think so, you know. But and I think when it came to something like the Comm Games, you could really see the disappointment in some of the boys because, you know, in reflection, you know, it can be one of the biggest moments of your, you know, rugby career. And. Yeah. To be so close can, like anything, you know, any sport, it can be very, very difficult. And I could certainly see that on some of the boys. But, you know, but with because they were professional athletes and they really helped us prepare, you know, in terms of training and competing. And that really set us up for, you know, for going on to win that medal.
I'll move on because I got injured, so I didn't really care about Kuala Lumpur. And I cried when you guys won the gold medal, my mate. But congratulations. Hey, but also, you went on to, once you did your sevens thing and you did that for a while and were outstanding and went on to the 15s career and had a massive career there. I mean, playing for the Blues and the Highlanders. And then you went to the Crusaders the end of, I think it was 04. And then 05, you had a massive season. So I just want to ask you, like, we're in the Highlanders together and that's a really cool environment, but... What was it about this Crusaders environment do you think that allowed you to thrive in 05?
Yeah, it's, you know, you always hear about what's the secret to the Crusaders' success, and it obviously hasn't changed. It just keeps evolving, and I think that was the thing. They always looking at ways to do things, you know, better, and you talk about the one percenters, and it just comes down to a lot of it falls back on the individual in terms of accountability, you know, how you want to be seen, you know, representing the jersey a little bit. You know, a lot of the All Black standards are certainly there. But I think what I found down at the Crusaders was there was actually no pressure. So I guess when you're in an environment where you're happy, you're comfortable, there's no pressure, you can really get the best out of yourself. Because as we know, when you're enjoying, you can see when players are happy, they're playing their best rugby, they're smiling, you know, they're not feeling restricted. So, you know, it's not just one thing. There's a number of things there. And obviously the coaching, I think the coaching was really important. At the time, obviously, we had Robbie Deans. Yeah. He was probably the best coach at the time for really having that player to coach relationship. He was extremely good at being on your level. So you never had that, you know, I guess when I first sort of played Super Rugby, it was very separate. You know, you got the coaches and you've got the players. So I think, yeah, and you can see that with, you know, Scott Robinson. You can see he's still a player, but he's their coach. So I think that balance has been really important, and I think it's been a part of the success of the Crusaders.
Yeah, do you think when you say, like, no pressure, is it more the pressure comes from within the group rather than peer pressure, like, say, to turn up on time rather than the coach, like you say, putting his fist down?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, you feel it from within, so it's not external pressure. There is obviously internal pressure, but it's collective and it's from your mates. So obviously that bonding is really important. And I just found that Christchurch, you know, very sporty city. I think it really allows for teams to come together. You know, like, I just find that it's for me, I found it was a bigger version of Gisborne. We're very, very sporty, very, very intimate as a city. So therefore, we got to spend a lot of times, you know, with other family members and their families. You got to know the names of, you know, all the kids. So just things like that sort of made, you know, made it all come together.
Obviously, they made you read a dictionary down here. Your vocab's outstanding, my mate. But
I did that in the outside of training. classes. Because all I did at school was play rugby, so I needed a few.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome, bro. But I just want to go back to this 05 season. I mean, it was huge for you. I mean, 15 tries in Super. I mean, you're Super Rugby Player of the Year. You're Māori Player of the Year. I mean, obviously, was there anything you changed physically leading to that build-up or that year?
Yeah, I think it was just, I think maturity comes into it. I think I was about 27 at the time, so I wasn't, you know, a spring chicken, but... And I think earlier in my career, sort of through my early 20s, over the period of about 3 years, I had a lot of hamstring issues.
Yeah.
I think that's probably thanks to Titch, but, you know, managed to sort of get past that, and then had a bit of time in the saddle with the Blues. Yeah. You know, 2003, won the Super Rugby that year. Played a lot of rugby in 04 with the Blues. So, you know, just got a bit more experience.
Yeah.
And then had an extremely tough off-season. At the end of 04 on the back of an All Black tour, and then was pretty much set up for, you know, a good 05 season.
I was going to say that 05 and the All Blacks, you took off. I reckon you really felt comfortable and massive. You spoke about the age where you come to sort of mature. There's a lot of young guys making the All Blacks. Now, what's your thoughts on that? Because I've been thrusted straight in there, you know, and they're still, I don't think, totally learnt their trade where you'd had and blew up. But what's your thoughts around there, man?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think if you look at it, the younger boys are probably different athletes, you know, today. They're as physical, you know, as an experienced winger is. They're big and they're strong and they're fast. And I think, you know, you can see the talent that they've got, and it's super exciting. And you can see that, you know, the All Black selectors, you know, have been looking for that blend of really experienced guys, but also a couple of younger guys that can really light it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really important. There's certainly a place for those younger guys. I think, you know, when you look at the outside backs, particularly on the wing, you know, only a couple of years ago, Rico Ioane was a superstar on the wing. It was like, oh, he's going to have 10 years on the wing. And then all of a sudden he wasn't even getting a run 2 years later at the World Cup. Mm. So from I think that would be the toughest thing for those young boys is just understanding that there's a lot of competition on the wings and there's a lot more movement, you know, with the outside backs. So I think that's really going to be the challenge moving forward.
I mean, there's always competition in ABs, as you know, and we've had some superstar out back three. I mean, how did you deal with that situation? Did you think you thrived more with that competition?
Yeah, that's right. You know, because just like anything, if you don't perform, someone else is gonna take your place.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really changed too much. You know, you've still got to be on top of your game, and you've always got to seek to be better. So, yeah, competition's healthy, and that's what makes New Zealand rugby, you know what it is having guys hot on your heels, and you know you wouldn't want it any other way.
Do you think it's changed much from when you were in the All Blacks, the game plan or the positional stuff with back three?
I think what you're seeing now is probably you're starting to get a little bit more. The player's starting to evolve a little bit more. Mm. You know, you've got to be an all rounder now. You've got to be able to run past, kick, triple threat. So you've got to be able to do all those things now. You've got to be excellent under the high ball. You know, so you can't really afford to have any chinks in your armour. But I think just like as mentioned before, I think physically. You see the boys, becoming a lot stronger and bigger a lot sooner.
Yeah, I suppose, too, when you go wide, you've got to clean rucks as well, so I would never be any good.
I never used to clean rucks, so that's probably changed the heck of a lot. You know, they've got to be loose forwards out there now, too.
Hey, who was your roomie with the All Blacks? Did you have to switch around, or were you able to go with the same bloke, or what was the story there?
No, you actually got to change around a little bit. I think if you were... close to test match time, you'd be in your positions, your back three, your centres, and you'd room with those sorts of guys.
Yeah.
If you're in camp a bit earlier, then you tend to get mix up, a little bit.
Yeah.
So there was a good mixture there. Probably one of the worst roommates I had was a guy called Chris Jack, the big lock.
The big bugger.
Quite a selfish guy, you'd come in after dinner, 8 o'clock, ready to watch a bit of TV, get all comfortable on the bed, and then our mate turns the TV off and goes to sleep. I actually want to watch some TV here, Jacko. I'm not sure what you're up to. But he's a good man, Chris. You get to meet a lot of different characters. And,
yeah.
You have some good times with those guys.
You spoke about the coaching group with the Crusaders. How was the coaching group with the All Blacks?
Yeah, when I made the ABs in 2004, obviously on the back of 2003, it was a new coaching setup after John Mitchell.
Yeah.
So obviously Graham Henry was new and Steve Hansen was there. I think that might have been his first year. And Wayne Smith had obviously come back in.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough, I did have a bit of a relationship with Graham Henry. He actually got me out of Poverty Bay to play rugby in Auckland.
Ooh.
I can sort of thank Ted for that. Mm. I played a season for Poverty Bay and went to the Steinlager Rugby Awards. And, back then it was three divisions, so I was playing in the third division for Poverty Bay. And, he got nominated as a player of the year for each division, so I made the final three for that. I didn't win the, the player of the year, but I was sitting at the same table as Graham Henry. And after the event, he just walked up to me and said, "You want to come play rugby in Auckland?" Sent me a contract and away we went. So it was probably right place, right time as well, with that. And that's how I kind of got started too.
How was that move though? Going from Gizzy to Auckland's a pretty massive move.
Yeah, it was real massive.
Petrol prices are a bit higher.
Well, I couldn't take my bike up to Auckland, bro, that's for sure. I was lucky enough, I got given a car and that was great, but... Yeah, the transition was a bit of a wake-up call for me. I got invited to a Blues training. Mm. I think Graham was the coach. I can't remember what year. It might have been 98 or something, or 98. And I went to training, and, training was 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, like a good coastie boy, I show up at 10:05. And the boys had already started doing the 3K, and I'm standing there. No one knows who I am, and they're like, who's this random guy? And I just kind of floated around, walking around in circles, and then I left about half an hour later. It was just really weird. I felt like an outsider, which, you know, I was.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I wasn't there on time, and just little things like that. You learn pretty quickly to you got to get right.
But then you actually saw the light and come over to the right side of the bridge and played at North Harbour, my mate. So we had a bit of a tribe there, didn't we? But how did you find being over there? Because it'd be a totally different feel to Auckland, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that was it. I guess the reason I went to Harbour was I had a lot of mates there, you know, the guys like yourself, which I looked up to as a schoolboy, and, you know, Rua Tipuke and Eric Rush and Frano Bodica, you know, Buck Shelford was the coach, you know, there, lots of inspirational characters there. So for me, 100%, it felt like home, you know, going there. And the 4 years I had there was certainly, you know, some of the best years that I played a lot of good rugby, you know, with North Harbour, and I think the environment allowed for that. And the way we played rugby, you know, was exciting. And we tipped over a lot of the top sides, you know, over those years. So, no, really good memories.
Oh, yeah, especially down at Rototo's, but we won't go there. I mean, I want to go to the when you played the British and Irish Lions. I mean, when you get that opportunity, because it doesn't come around for a lot of people, and some people don't get to do it throughout your career, you got the opportunity to play against the British and Irish Lions. I mean, how massive was that for you?
Yeah, it was. I guess you don't really understand the meaning of it until you're in it. And fortunately, before the three tests, we got to play with the Māori side first.
Yeah.
So that was my intro to the Lions series. You know, with Matt Tupou, we played a preseason game in Fiji. So we went over to Fiji to play them the week before, just to get a bit of rugby in and combinations going. And then prior to the Māori game against the British Lions, we had Aaron Penny, who was the big number eight that was an All Black. Mm. And he spoke about the opportunity that he got as a Māori All Black 12 years earlier. And he talked about that particular game, and the Māoris were somewhat dominating, you know, the British Lions. Yeah. And they kind of had the game in the bag, and then I think towards that back end of the half, they sort of let the game get away, and they lost that game. So listening to his speech was really sort of hit at home, the importance of, you know, the opportunities don't come around, like you were saying. And that was certainly a one-off. And, you know, it set us up for that Māori game, beating the British Lions. And then, of course, we were set up for, you know, for the test matches.
What was it like there running out? Because I didn't realise the magnitude either until they come the last time. And just their supporters, man, they're just so hearty. And it's just a totally different vibe. They're singing, they're having a good time. The staunch of their kit, it's different, eh? It's totally different.
Yeah, it's way different, you know. They certainly know how to, I guess, be inspirational supporters. They're very vocal. They love to sing. So that experience was amazing. I remember the test match, the first one down in Christchurch. It was freezing. It's probably one of the coldest games I've ever played in. Mm. You know, the All Black boys, I was on the bench for that game, and we had to have hot soup, you know.
The old cup of soup, was it?
To us while we sat on the bench, because it was that cold. And I think after Tana Umanga had spear-tackled old O'Driscoll, he had to come off because his hands had basically frozen over. So that's how cold it was. But from a supporter's point of view, I remember we were coming out of the tunnel and I saw a couple of Irish supporters. You know, they had their green colours on, but when I had a closer look, it was actually body paint. You know, and they obviously didn't feel the cold. And I was thinking, man, these guys are, you know, they're crazy. But you could just see how wound up they were for the occasion. And, you know, things like that it was great to see.
Did you get yourself on a jersey, a British and Irish Lions jersey?
Yeah, I did, actually. I managed to get Shane Williams' jersey,
nice,
the winger. So, yeah, I've got it stashed away there.
Do you keep much memorabilia?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I kept all my jerseys. I didn't give away any All Black jerseys. I remember it was an old All Black prop. I'm not sure which one. Might have been Richard Lowe, actually. And I remember him saying, you know, you grow up wanting to be an All Black, and then when you wear that jersey, you're not about to give it away. So yeah. I really resonated with that. And so every time I got that opportunity, because, you know, all the hard work you do, all the sacrifice you do is for that jersey. So I wasn't, you know, I wasn't prepared to give that away. And, you know, I thought that was really a cool thing that he did. And I really liked it, so I did the same thing.
Oh, no, fair enough, bro. I don't blame you. You moved on to Contenci, went to Japan, but I want to talk about now what you're up to. A lot of players from my era and leading into yours really struggled with their transition over from their playing career into the work environment, I suppose. And you've actually done really, really well. So you've got your Gear Rugby Academy started up. Just talk us through that, how that all sort of eventuated.
Yeah, so we've got a Gear Rugby Academy. My brother Jose, he lives up, so we're obviously in Australia, he lives up the sunny coast. So it was just, and we've been a part of the IRANS program, but the Australian version. So we've done a bit of coaching there. So it was just an opportunity to come together and create that brand. So Gear Rugby Academy. So we're running obviously school holiday camps. So that's you know, just a little something that we're sort of doing in the next couple of weeks, which was awesome. And then, you know, sort of got RicoGearRugby.com, which is this brand here. So we're releasing a rugby skills app built in with, it's got AI built into it, so that'll be probably released later in the year. Got an online shop connected with that. It's funny, bro, I actually had to write down a list of the things that I'm doing because I was bound to forget something.
Yeah.
We've just created a rugby beach brand, so there's going to be a rugby tournament later in the year. It's going to be a big event here on the Gold Coast, so, you know, it takes a lot of months to develop that. We've got a podcast called The Ruck, so obviously we had you on as one of our first superheroes. And we've had, you know, I've had Aaron Smith and Kevin Mealama, so that's on Spotify, so that's called The Ruck, Catching Up With Boys. So we'll kick that off again probably in the next sort of couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We've done a pilot for a sport that's called the Sports Bar, you know, a bit like Sports Cafe back in the day.
Yes.
Again, all sports, so there's a bit of that. And then I've got an online sort of supplement brand, which is protein and energy and, you know, performance products. Newcastle Knights are using the products at the moment. Isagenix is branded across the back, so been involved with that. And on top of that, bro, I'm still involved with rugby, so I'm coaching at Bond University.
Oh, man, so that's massive. That's awesome.
There's plenty. But, you know, I guess you talk about the transition. And when I finished playing in Japan, I went back to Gisborne for a couple of years and I worked with the rugby union there, so under the New Zealand Rugby Union umbrella. So, you know, fortunate to sort of spend a bit of time, you know, in that role. And it does. It takes time to find where you fit, where you fit in. Certainly challenging, but also the beauty about being a professional rugby player is you get to choose. You can choose what you want to do, and sometimes you know, that does take time. Some guys know what they're going to do when they finish, and other guys don't. And you know, I didn't really know what I was going to do, and it's taken a few years to figure that out. But you got to surround yourself with good people, and you know, you're the sum of the five people you hang around. So probably fortunate for me, I'm not hanging around some of my old mates because they really used to leave me astray. But
you leave Te Puke and Matua Parkinson alone, my mate. They're doing good guys.
Not naming names. Oh, yeah. But you know, so you know, and that's where we are at the moment. So I think it's you know, you just got to sink your teeth into something and enjoy what you do.
Oh, it's exciting seeing you thrive and the things you're talking about. So with your rugby academy, anyone can go to your rugby academy. They can just sign up and go.
Yeah, we're just doing the kids for now. We're just doing ages 9 to 15. So you know, very straightforward. We got another couple of coaches coming in. We all give the kids a t-shirt and we do it over a few days. And you know, we add a lot of value to what they want to learn. And you know, like we said, sort of have a bit of fun around that.
And so, if the boys want to get some protein or people want to get some protein, they just go to your website, do they, and then hook those up.
Yeah. So gearupwithrico.com. You know, there's plenty of information there. You'll go to the website and you'll see, you know, a lot of detail around, I guess, why we need certain things to help us with training and recovery. A lot of professional athletes are already using the products. So it's just that, you know, that 1 or 2% that, you know, we're always looking for, especially, you know, as athletes and sports people.
Well, I need more than 1 and 2%. I probably need 20%, my mate, so I can't wait for the care package. Hey, you know what? It's always a pleasure catching up with you, my man. Sounds like you're doing awesome. You're thriving. We all hope it go well, brother.
No, pleasure. Hey, thanks for having us, KT, and always great to catch up, and really loving watching New Zealand rugby and what's happening with Aotearoa, Super Rugby. It's really exciting.
Awesome. Kia ora Māori. There he is, Rico Gear, absolute weapon. Awesome to see him thriving. Once again, Playmakers is where it's going to be at. Make sure you catch us soon.